This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Let's have some fun. On a Tuesday, a wonderful Tuesday, there are great things happening out there, believe it or not. And we're going to discuss some of those things. Yes, obviously, we'll get to the latest with the ICE and Minnesota stuff. But Democrats are panicking for understandable reasons. I will lay out the reasons why. Maybe we should be panicking when you look at the poll numbers when it comes to the economy. We'll go over that. We have emails. We have, well, Europe is probably done. We're actually doing something about H-1Bs. Virginia is a nightmare. All that, fighting kangaroos, and so much more coming up tonight on the world famous Jesse Kelly Show. Now, before we get into Democrats, they're panicking. Before we get into ICE, what is and is not happening, what's the Trump administration doing? Why are they doing it? Kristi Noem is being moved. But before we move any of that, you know, how many times have we talked about an ancient battle of some kind and there being a moment in that battle where everything hinged on that moment? Do you remember the Siege of Tyre? That's one of the ones I remember. I mean, I remember all of them, but remember Alexander the Great? His army surrounds this island. Fortified, impenetrable, has a nightmare of a time getting in there, basically building a bridge. People are dying. It's a nightmare. And eventually we get to a place where Alexander the Great and his troops, they make a little beachhead inside the city. Alexander the Great is physically with them as he always was, front lines, killing people, almost dying, as he always was. And the city mobilized its troops, and they came after him in that beachhead. And that was the moment of the Siege of Tyre. Oh, the whole siege mattered. What came after mattered. What happened before mattered. The whole thing mattered. But that moment was everything. If they had managed to kill him, drive his troops out from that beachhead, the Greeks, the Macedonians, I should say, they don't take Tyre. Battle over. Instead, they were not able to force him out. He stayed where he was. They took the city. Battle over. We talk about it 2,000 years later on the radio show. There are many, many times in life, politics, war, other times, where, man, it could go either way. And the stakes are everything. And it's very, very tempting in those moments. If you're Alexander the Great, you've made the beachhead into Tyre. Remember, you're a conqueror. You're going to conquer the whole world. But now you're surrounded by all these troops and the arrows are coming and people are dying and screaming and you're outnumbered and you're thinking to yourself, uh-oh. Maybe a good time to head to the boats. We've lost. And if you do that, you'll live. Why not do it? It's easy to lose your nerve in those moments. Right now in the United States of America, we are in a moment I would argue, in this moment, I use the term moment, but it's going to be 3 years. We are in a moment that very likely could decide 250 years from now in the United States of America. Isn't that wild to think about? We're only 250 years old this year. 250 years from now, what the country looks like could very well be determined by this moment. When you look at the rest of the planet, a story that I'm seeing today out of Spain, after being ravaged by foreign barbarians, they've announced their intention to bring in 500,000 more of them. Spain is gone. Over. Goodbye. This moment now in America, this moment doesn't just determine probably the future of the country. This determines whether America will be that last bastion of Western civilization or whether we're simply going to fall like the UK has fallen and Germany has fallen and Spain has certainly fallen. The churches are burning in France as they build a new mosque every day. Is that going to be us? Could be. This is the moment. Now, in that moment, it's the most human nature thing in the world to only see the bad and the dangers of losing it. Completely understandable when the stakes are that high. We're surrounded, after all. I have all of your emails, and I'll get to them, about what is happening and not happening in Minneapolis. Donald Trump is caving. Why is Greg Bovino being moved out? There are even reports. I'm actually looking at a report right here. This is from Reuters. It must be true, right? Trump seeking damage control weighs less aggressive approach in Minneapolis. Now we're all weeping and we're gnashing our teeth. It's over. Trump caved. And I'm not saying he didn't. I don't know yet. You don't know yet. But let me point out a couple things to you. In fact, Ryan Gerdusky, he's going to join us about 20 minutes from now, 20, 30 minutes from now. And we're going to talk to him about this. He's great about breaking down numbers. He's been on the show many times before. But here's something from the American Redistricting Project. You know that we're going to have a new census, and you also understand, you know how this works, how many congressional seats you get, electoral college votes, all these things. They're determined by the population of your state. One of the side reasons I've encouraged you to move to a red state, not just so your life can be better and things are more affordable and things are safer. It's because when doing that, you actually starve blue states of political power and you give more power to red states. Wow. Look at this. By 2030, if all stays on pace, Texas is going to gain 4 seats. Florida is going to gain 2 seats. Arizona, Georgia, Indiana, North Carolina, Utah going to gain 1 seat. California, they're losing 4. Illinois, Minnesota, New York, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Wisconsin, they're all losing a seat. Democrats themselves, they understand what I just told you. They understand that right now is everything. They, in a lot of ways, are mortally afraid. The numbers are not on their side. And when I say numbers, I don't mean you and me. I'm not even talking about polling numbers. I'm talking about simple political power. Because communists are miserable, demonic people, they pass destructive policies that make the lives of people worse who live under communist rule. Because they've done that in places like New York and California and Illinois and every other place where they have held power, people are voting with their feet. Honey, we can't afford to live here anymore. Honey, the regulations are too high. Honey, this is unsafe. My buddy Brad and his wife, two adorable kids, fell in love with Denver, Colorado years and years and years ago, made a career there, a wonderful living there. The second time he got his car stolen from his driveway in his safe suburban area, him and his wife sat down and said, "We're not doing this anymore. We're going back to Montana. Blood red." You think Democrats don't know about these numbers? I know that you are afraid. I am too. Because everything is on the line right now. If we continue with this, we starve them of congressional seats, we massively deport foreigners, if we continue winning, if we don't lose our nerve, if we stay the course, we will win and take our country back. It'll take years. It'll take decades. Decades. But we will win. If we cave, if we crumble, we will lose. But they're in the same situation. And one of the great benefits for them, what they love, you know what they love? Well, this article from Reuters, this headline I read, it's actually perfect. Let me read it again. What do you hear here? Trump, seeking damage control, weighs less aggressive approach in Minneapolis. And it's according to sources in the White House. Donald Trump did not make an announcement today about backing off in Minneapolis. Why would the communists print this headline? Because they want you demoralized, despondent. It's over. We've lost. They feel like that right now, too. Don't join them. All right? Hang on.
Missed out?
Catch up.
JesseKellyShow.com.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a magnificent Tuesday. Remember, you can email the show. We love your emails. Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. Ryan Gerdusky coming up about 10 minutes. So now he's going to talk about these numbers. They're losing seats. We're gaining seats. He's going to talk about what they're doing to kids in Los Angeles schools. So much more. That's coming up 10 minutes from now. But I have your emails, and none of them are stupid. They're not stupid. It's me. I'm a jerk. I would tell you if they're stupid. But I have these emails. Jesse, President Trump appears to be giving the street communists the win. Is this really bad or I'm missing something? What's she referring to? Well, Greg Bovino, that Border Patrol guy everybody loves, he's being moved out of Minneapolis. Kristi Noem's been put on the back burner. Tom Homan's coming in. Donald Trump's even being asked, is Kristi Noem stepping down?
Kristi Noem going to step down.
No. I have, yeah.
No. But we're getting, well, emails like this. Jesse, I just heard on the news that the mayor of Minneapolis said after his conversation with Trump that some members of ICE will begin leaving Minnesota next Tuesday. Please tell me that's not true. Okay. Donald Trump, he talked about talking to Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey and Governor Tim Walz.
I had Jacob Frey and I had Governor Walz, and I mean they were great calls. So what we need is their criminals. You know, they have criminals, and all I said, just give us your criminals, and if you give us the criminals, it all goes away. They're there to pick up murders. I don't know if you saw, but it was a couple of days ago announced that crime is the lowest in the history of our country, the recorded history of our country.
Wow.
That's a big statement. That's because of us. That's because we go into cities and towns. Usually we're embraced. Sometimes we're not. And when we're not, it just makes it harder.
Okay. When you hear Donald Trump say, I had a great call with Jacob Frey. I had a great call with Tim Walz. I know exactly what you do. You do the exact same thing I did. You go, oh, what? Had a great call. You can't trust these guys. So allow me to put something out there, if you will. Couple things. First, how long have we had the talk about foreigners in the Democrat Party and what it means to them? The Democrat Party is the party of the Communist Revolution. The Communist Revolution has put everything, banked everything, all their chips to the center of the table on the mass importation of foreign barbarians. They're easy to buy off. They have kids who are crazily American citizens. That it's the power base of the Democrat Party. It's everything for them. So let me ask you, do you believe that Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey, do you believe that he came to an agreement with Donald Trump to give him foreigners who are in Minneapolis? Do you believe that? Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. This guy, Tim Walz.
Should the Senate Democrats allow that federal government funding bill to advance?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. And I want to thank Senator Smith and Klobuchar, who were very early here, Senator Schumer, Senator Murphy, just others who have called me, Senator Padilla, all have called and committed to that. Absolutely not.
Headline, Walls calls the Donald Trump conversation productive. But I also have this headline here. Tim Walls has the National Guard handing out coffee and donuts to anti-ICE activists. Remember when we went over the actual numbers in the state of Minnesota and we broke it down numbers-wise and we figured out that Tim Walls never goes to the governor's mansion if foreigners aren't there? Tim Walls only got to be governor of Minnesota because of foreigners. Do you think a phone call with Donald Trump has somehow changed the mind of that communist? Do you think today, tonight, as we're sleeping, Tim Walls is going to go down and round up all the illegals in jail and hand them over to ICE? Do you believe that? Well, let's skip past all that. No. The communists are not going to break at all. So, if you're Donald Trump, why say this?
I had Jacob Frey and I had Governor Walz, and I mean, they were great calls. So what we need is their criminals. You know, they have criminals. And all I said,
they were great calls. I said, just give me your criminals. I had great calls with them. What's happening here? What's happening, I think, and if things change tomorrow, I'm going to come on here and lose my mind, as I promised you I would. I believe this is happening. I believe Donald Trump is not changing anything of significance in Minnesota. I believe he's making Democrats look terrible. I called them. We had a wonderful call, a productive call. Hey, you want Kristi Noem to go somewhere else? Fine. I'll just send in my buddy Tom Homan. He's soft and cuddly. You're fine with that, right? We'll change leadership, right? Now, if we continue to deport foreigners from Minneapolis, from Minnesota, and if the communists like Jacob Frey and Tim Walls continue to oppose them, who looks worse now? Nothing has changed as of this moment. Maybe tomorrow we wake up and it has changed. But right now, we're moving a couple pieces around the board. I've seen nothing from the Trump administration, nothing from them saying we're backing off deportations. And I know because I've been all over it all day waiting to lose my mind and get angry. I've been waiting for it. I haven't seen it. Let's pause on this. We'll talk to Ryan Gruduski about numbers because I think maybe it'll make you feel better. Next.
He doesn't care if you believe him, but he's right. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Tuesday. And as promised, maybe to make you feel better about some things, possibly worse about some other things, is my buddy Ryan Gruduski of the 1776 Project. And we'll get to what they're doing in just a few. Ryan, I'm looking at this redistricting that's coming in 2030. And if I'm a Democrat, I'm a little uncomfortable.
It's bad. I mean, the numbers are really bad. And remind you that these are numbers based off the census projections from 2024 to July of 2025. So it doesn't include ICE, the newest deportation numbers, and it doesn't include self-deportation by Democrats. It's really bad. California is back to losing population every year, which was it was a place they were not in, you know, a year and a half ago, thanks to an ample supply of population growth from illegal immigration. But California lost 119,000 people in the last year alone because so many people are running from failed governance. And a number of states have lower populations today than they did in 2020, big blue states.
Okay, Ryan, can you break down the why for me? Obviously, I have my opinion of why, but people are leaving Illinois, they're leaving California, New York, Oregon, maybe the prettiest state in the union, and they're moving. Apparently, all of them are moving to Florida, Texas, and Idaho. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically it. California had a net of negative 229,000 Americans left the state. 109,000 immigrants moved to the state, but it's still a net loss. They lost 229,000. Illinois lost 40,000, and New York lost 137,000 people, almost 400,000 people between just three states in the country. A big part of it is that, I mean, those states don't work. The Democratic policies don't work. They don't build housing. They have high energy costs, high taxes. We all know the sob story, and they've also, governors there have said to Republicans in those states, you need to go, you need to leave. And at the same time, Trump has cracked down on immigration. Now, mind you, this is only 5 months of the Trump administration, so, and it's the first 5 months, so it's not as ramped up as it was. But they say net immigration for the first 5 months and the last 7 months of Trump, first 5 months of Trump, last 7 months of Biden, was 1.26 million. That's cut in more than half from the year before. They're expecting next year to be down to just 300,000, which is another massive 70% cut, almost 90% cut from when Biden was in office, the first full calendar year of just Trump months, the first 12 months of just Trump months. And that's having a big impact on states that their growth is completely dependent on immigration. California, New York, Illinois, there's a number of them where everything, net migration is horrible. Massachusetts, New Jersey, you name it. Now, what that means electorally is, if depending on which analysis, there's one by Carnegie Mellon, there's another one by the American Reapportionment Project, they estimate that between 8 and 11 House seats are leaving deep blue seats and either going to purple states like North Carolina, Arizona, Georgia, or deep red states, Florida, Utah, Idaho, and Texas. And that means about a net of 4 to 5 more Republican, safe Republican House seats. But what it really means is in the 2032 election, which is only 7 years away, but only 5 years to 2030 to the reapportionment, then in the 2030s, that whole decade into 2040, it means that a Republican can win the White House with just Ohio, Florida, North Carolina, Georgia, and Arizona. The whole, we need Michigan, we need Wisconsin, we need to reach out to New Hampshire or Minnesota. That's all gone now. All of that stuff is gone. We just need to hold the states that Trump won in 2024 in order to win for an entire decade of the presidency. And think what happens in that decade. Sotomayor retires. Elena Kagan retires. I mean, the entire Obama or most of the what's ever left of the Clinton judges all retire. A lot of the Obama judges retire. It could be a reshaping, a fundamental reshaping of the entire country during that decade. And the Republicans have a very heavy chance at winning the Electoral College if they just hold the states that they have been holding for most of the last couple election cycles.
Speaking with my friend Ryan Gradusky of the 1776 Project PAC. Okay, Ryan, for those of us who are confused, I'm pointing to me. How does this help us with the White House? I like the House of Representatives. I think it's a wonderful place. But the White House is obviously very, very important. Does this help at all?
Yes. So, you know, electoral college votes are redistributed by the House seats, right? So Texas will go from 40 electoral college votes to 44. California will go from 52 to 48. New York will probably lose 1 to 2 seats. That may can go from 29 seats rather down to 28 or 27. Illinois goes down from 19 to either 17 or 18. Those are big changes, and that means that the reach, the hard battles in states that Trump won by 1%, 1.5%, they're not must wins.
Okay, so riddle me this. If I'm a Democrat and I'm looking at these numbers, I'm in a complete panic because I'm watching significant political power go away, and it doesn't appear that I can do anything about it. But am I overstating that? What can they do about it?
What Democrats can do, and I mean, essence one, 2028 becomes extremely important, because what they could do in 2028 is open up the floodgates, do President Biden on speed, and flood the population with as many immigrants as possible. They could also sit there and really say to not only to illegals living in the state, but to illegals not living in the state, illegals living in Texas, illegals living in Tennessee, wherever, saying, you know, don't stay in your state. Come to ours. We'll protect you, hoping to boost their numbers up ahead of the census coming out in 2030. But really, that's it. And they have to invest heavily in Georgia. I mean, Georgia is really the closest of all the major swing states that they have. If they win Georgia, it makes Pennsylvania in play. But then they have to sit there and win basically the entire Rust Belt and Georgia. But I think they're going to sit there and spend $1 billion trying to sit there and turn out Georgia, which demographics are more favorable to them given the heavy black population.
Ryan, I'm going to play something for you. I'm sure you've heard it. This was on CNN.
Deporting all immigrants who are here illegally, 55% of the New York Times, Marquette, 64%, CBS News, 57%, ABC News with a slightly different question, 56%. So what you're seeing essentially here is a very clear indication that a majority of Americans, in fact, when they're asked this blunt question, which I believe gets at the underlying feelings, do in fact want to deport all immigrants who are here illegally. There's no arguing with these different numbers because they're all essentially the same across four different pollsters.
The Trump administration, what they're doing is popular. I get the feeling they're worried it's unpopular. Calm me down.
So, I mean, the idea is popular, but the tactics are not. They don't. Americans don't like the masked ICE agents. And obviously, the shootings have really rattled a lot of people. They want illegal aliens out of the country. They think illegal immigration is a huge problem. They don't like some of the tactics that are being used. I don't think that Kristi Noem has been a good job as a spokesperson for DHS. She did, according to Fox News, she sidelined Tom Homan, who has 30-plus years experience, is a hard-nosed guy and is much more tactical than I think the approach that she and Corey Lewandowski have taken. That is where I think it's the difference of the ideas versus how it's been carried out. So they do want illegal aliens deported. They do want America. You know, I'm sure if the president sat there and put heavier fines on businesses that operate with illegal immigration, and it was done in a way that was not so aggressive, that kind of, you know, rattles a lot of people, especially the more effeminate ones in our country. But they do want illegal aliens gone. This has not changed since, you know, Joe Biden was president.
Speaking with Ryan Gerdusky, yeah, it's wild that Kristi and Corey are working so closely together. Ryan, do you have another couple minutes? Sorry about that. Do you have another couple minutes? I want to talk about this lawsuit you have going on and what they're trying. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. What they're doing in California, it's not hard to figure out why people are leaving, certainly people with children. We'll talk to Ryan Gerdusky about that next.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a magnificent Tuesday. If you miss any part of the show, remember you can download it iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. Back with my friend Ryan Gerdusky of the 1776 Project Pack, which I've talked to you about many, many times before. All right, Ryan, you have been an absolute guerrilla terrorist with this pack for communists across the country. What are you doing to them right now in California?
So the PAC launched several years ago, and then a year ago we launched a foundation called the 1776 Project Foundation, and it was to sit there and promote conservative ideas once we have elected school board members. Well, what we're doing now in California is we're bringing a lawsuit against Los Angeles Unified School District. Basically, the way the school system works is if a school is over 30% white, the school loses funding. The school loses access to teachers, classroom sizes increase, and they sit there and they lose opportunity to go to a magnet school if they are gifted and talented students just because 30% of the population of the school is white. We have brought together a federal lawsuit that we are funding to sit there and to sue the district for racial discrimination against the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and we are suing to sit there and get this law changed, and not only get this changed, but we are going to work to sit there and change all these laws to do race-based education funding across the entire country.
Okay, pause for a moment because I almost fell out of my chair. So who passed this law or this rule? Who was responsible for deciding that your class can't be too white?
So it comes back to a 1960s court battle, right? It was a battle in the 1960s over racial discrimination. And they sat there and they said that in the 1980s, 20 years later, they ruled that while there was no purposeful discrimination, that there was segregation, mostly based on income, honestly. And so they sat there and they decided they were going to sit there and change the way the funding was as a way to make things more equal, right? They gave heavier amounts of money to districts and schools that were Latino, Asian, Native American. But the crazy thing is, Jesse, the term white changes constantly throughout the years. Persians are considered white. Middle Easterners are considered white. Certain Latin Americans are considered white. And there has been an
outright, you know, use of discriminatory policies that the school district mandated. Now, the court did not sit there and say, you must do this kind of funding stuff. They said, yeah, you should try to, you know, resolve the whole amount of where kids are and where they're coming from and make things more equitable. The school took it upon themselves to say, okay, we're going to racially discriminate against white students. And they've been doing this since the 1980s, and no one's brought a lawsuit. We found a plaintiff. We found a white parent whose child is in one of these schools that has less access to funds, to money, to teachers, all because the children there are white. And so we are going to sue, and we're taking this to federal court. We have a very, very liberal judge in our district court, but we're willing to take this as far as it needs to go to rectify the situation.
Persians are considered white. What about Italians? We're not claiming those people, are we?
Well, I know you would like that, but they are in fact considered Caucasian. Yes, they are.
All right. So what about the Asians? What about the Asians? Their test scores are through the roof. Can we claim them?
Well, that's very funny because I spoke to a reporter from the New York Times, the one who broke the story, and they mentioned, oh, well, this was just about test results and making sure certain populations did better. And I said, well, if that's the truth, why aren't Asians as equally discriminated against? But they're clearly not. This is nothing to do with results. This is everything to do with racism. This is racism against white people that they have been doing for decades. Very openly, it's on their website. I didn't have to sit there and, you know, hire an investigator to sit there and do this research. They openly promote that they do this in the school system. It's brazenly been like this for decades. So LA is sitting there and they're mounting this defense. We're willing to take this along the way, and we posted the entire lawsuit on 1776 Foundation, projectfoundation.org. You could check it out. And I think that this is national ramifications. This is the first major lawsuit, especially since the Harvard case, that explicitly looks at education from a white perspective, from discriminating against white children. And that's where we're willing to sit there and really go for it.
Ryan, again, speaking with Ryan Gurdusky. Ryan, okay, so you and I have been talking for years. We've known each other for years about this school board stuff, this project you've been working on. We've talked offline about this. Tell me we've been making gains. Tell me we are creating more activists and more people are getting involved. But don't lie to me. Are we sucking it up or are we doing good?
No. I mean, listen, I think that where we have won, right? So perfect example, in Texas, in the suburbs of Dallas, this school district that we got a lot of the members elected in, there was an announcement that the school was going to host the Islamic Games. It was the school board, when they found this out, that shut it down immediately. The school board, our conservatives that we elected, made sure the Islamic Games were not held at this school in the suburbs of Dallas. We have school board members in Florida that have worked on a proposal to do classical education schools that are completely working off the CLT, the classical learning curriculum in public schools in Florida. We have other classrooms that are dealing with AI. A lot of it's nuanced, a lot of it's boring, a lot of it's not the sexy stuff, but we also have done the sexy stuff. We have done banning of the transgender sports. We have sat there and protected girls' locker rooms. We've done, you know, we're working on discipline curriculums. We're working on making sure that school children celebrate the 250th anniversary of America next year. All this stuff is happening as well. So I think where we have won, and we've won in a number of places, we've managed to sit there and make immense gains in some states. Florida, for example, Wisconsin, we've done great elections in. Parts of Pennsylvania, we've had really gangbuster elections. Maryland, believe it or not, Maryland, we've had robust election victories outside of Baltimore, and they fired bad superintendent after bad superintendent all along northern Maryland. So we've really, our activists have worked and done tremendous goals. And where they've been in the minority, they've been able to sit there and fight against some of the crazy stuff. So I think we have done immense progress. We've gotten over 250 elected since we first started 5 years ago, with the last group still really doing this since everything kind of took off. But the reason that we're the ones that continue is what we do is examine each individual district, and we amplify what the needs are for those districts. I don't sit there and say, you know, every district must be like this. I say, what's the issues in your district? Let's talk about it, and let's get something on the ground working. And it's been tremendously successful.
The 1776 Project Foundation, you know I'm a fan. I've been telling you about it for a long time. Ryan, thank you, my friend. As always, I appreciate it. How about that? I told you. I know. All the headlines, it's the end of the world. There are good things happening right now. They are afraid. You realize that? The communists are afraid. If we hold the line, we can win. It's going to take a long time, but we can win. In the meantime, switch to Pure Talk. Put your money where your morals are. Put your money with a company that hires Americans. A company, you know what's the nicest thing now? And I can't believe we live in this kind of country. I never have to worry about waking up in the morning, grabbing my phone, checking the news, and seeing Pure Talk sponsors anti-ICE protests. If you have Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile, that's your life every single friggin' day. And you have to have that wince moment where you're like, oh, that's me, that's my money. When Pure Talk gives back, because they're run by a veteran, they give back to veterans. And they hire Americans. They'll save you a fortune. They're on the same cell towers. Put your money where your morals are. Dial #250 and say save now. #250, save now. Switch to Pure Talk, all right? All right, we'll be back.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.